The reality for many of you is that investment properties where you live have become absolutely unaffordable. The good news is that there are many cities with affordable properties and many of those under 100K. If you're someone who's ready to buy your first out-of-state property in the next 4 months, then I encourage you to check out my free training that'll break down the process and show you exactly what it takes to invest out of state. I purchased properties out of state and it's changed my life. The same is possible for you. You simply need the right information. My free training will help you take that next step towards buying your first out-of-state property. You can watch the training right now at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode. Again, you can find it at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode.
Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second?
Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue, and the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast. Before we jump into this episode, make sure if you're on the audio side that you subscribe, leave a five-star rating and review. It helps us out a whole lot. So I look forward to hearing from you. And then also, if you're on YouTube, make sure you subscribe, make sure you hit the like button and leave a comment below. We definitely will appreciate it. Very excited for this episode today. Here with me today, I have Jason Parker out of Tulsa, Oklahoma. Jason, first, thank you so much for including me in your weekend, and thank you so much for jumping on the show.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Not only a great trip to be out in LA, but get to dialogue with you about one of my favorite pastimes, real estate. It's always a great opportunity.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I'm excited about this episode for a couple of reasons. So I'm a big sports fan, mm-hmm. You know, love basketball my whole life. You know, everybody thought they were going to the NBA, right? Myself included. You had the opportunity to play professionally. So I think this is a great story because we always hear about those who play professional sports and they go broke. Mm-hmm. You know, you probably know some guys who play pro and they're not in the best situations right now. So I think this is a great story for that reason, because, you know, you've been able to achieve quite a lot of success, in particular within real estate.
For sure. By God's grace, everything, of course. But yeah, going through that maturation process through being a high school All-American to becoming a Division I All-American to eventually getting my shot to play at the professional level, both overseas as well as in the NBA and NBA Development League, as it was called at the time. You know, those careers are always short-lived, no matter what we think. We think we're superhuman and, man, I'm going to play forever. And before you know it, it's over. And now you're, you know, under 30 years old and you're having to make life decisions. And it's like, can I be as successful in the second half of my life as I've been blessed to be in the first half is always the challenge.
Definitely. Definitely. So in one of our first conversations, we were talking about just the success you and your wife have been able to achieve within real estate. And I know you have upwards of 150 units. So how did you get started? How did you two get started within real estate?
Well, I tell people it started with a challenge. As me, myself, being an athlete, I was always driven by challenges. And in this particular situation, my career had ended. I had just finished law school. And I think my wife and I were going to get a car loan or something of the sort. And essentially, the loan officer asked us, well, what do you own? And I'm sitting here, I'm thinking, why does that matter? Like, we have the money to pay for the car. We have, you know, good income coming in. We have good credit. Why does that matter? And he essentially was telling us, well, you're going to get a better loan based on what you own. And that question pretty much reverberated in my mind all throughout the next week, so much so that I woke up in a cold sweat thinking, well, dang, what do I own? You know, and so I took that challenge. My wife and I took that challenge, and we basically studied the real estate game for 6 months and jumped into it and got our first single family property on our own in 2016, and pretty much grew from there, 2 to 3 properties every 6 months, until eventually in 2019 we made the switch. The game-changing switch to small apartments, which, you know, obviously we'll talk more about.
Definitely. I let's talk about that, because when I first spoke to you, you know, you were asking me, you know, what am I doing within real estate and mm-hmm. things like that. And I told you, yeah, you know, single family homes. And you told me, like, in the first call, like, you need to scale up.
Yeah.
Like, you need to look at small apartments.
Yeah.
So talk about that, because there are some investors who, you know, you get a single family home, maybe you get one a year and you just go up exactly. that way. Talk to us about that.
Well, that's how we progressed. But what we ultimately realized, like every single business owner realized, is that business, successful business, is a numbers game. McDonald's doesn't sell one hamburger. Starbucks doesn't sell one cup of coffee. It's scale. And it's no different in real estate. You get to seeing that you are going to make an average of typically $150 to $250 per door in most normal geographic locations. So why not get more and more doors? Not only is the scale provide you with security in the standpoint of the I call it the protection in the collection, because the numbers protect one, the units protect one another, meaning if you have a vacancy, you still have income coming in. But it also provides you with systems, because now all of a sudden I just need one handyman to change out all these locks, to change out all these fixtures. I'm not sending people around to random single family homes. And so there's so much power in the ability to scale. But so often, according to your point, many real estate investors don't take advantage of that. They get the one property, maybe two, maybe three. And what they're robbing themselves is the opportunity to really build a business that does become passive in nature, because the scale creates so much, not only success, but momentum.
Definitely, definitely. Appreciate you diving in. So you mentioned initially getting single family homes. Were these in Tulsa?
Yes, we've been pretty much primarily in Tulsa and what I call the tertiary market surrounding Tulsa. Mm-hmm. So anywhere within an hour of the Metroplex.
Got you. So talk to us about those beginnings, you know, getting those single family homes and starting to gain that momentum, because it sounds like you spent the 6 months studying and then, you know, slowly but surely you started to build up your confidence, build up your single family home. So talk to us about that stage.
Well, prior to the challenge that really got us going, while I was playing professionally, my dad had the idea to start off with a fix and flip business. And we started that right around 07. And by 08, we had our first properties that were built out. Well, 08, the market tanked, as we all know. And it was just terrible. Like, we couldn't sell anything. And so unbeknownst to us, that was the beginning of our buy and hold journey, because we pretty much transitioned those properties into buy and hold rentals, where we just started renting them out. Well, over the course of this 6, 7, 8 year odyssey, we got to realizing that, hey, this is actually a good little business structure. So fast forward, I get the challenge from the banker and I'm like, well, we kind of already know this buy and hold real estate game. So we pretty much dove headfirst into that. We bought our first home with our own money, paid for it completely cash. And we realized that that was a huge mistake, because you cannot scale that way and you're quickly out of capital, which is basically your growth serum. And so with no fuel to move forward, we went to the bank and said, hey, we've had success now with these one or two properties. How do we move forward? And the bank pretty much started to show us a litany of different programs that they have that allowed us to move forward and purchase more properties with very small amounts of capital. And so doing that year after year over the course of 3 to 4 years, again, we're like, we come to the next threshold in our business, and it's how do we grow even faster? And that's when we stumbled upon small apartments. And so we pretty much started investing in units, in complexes with units between 2 and 20 properties. And all of a sudden doing that, you know, buying a complex every 6 months, you know, whether it was a 10 unit or a 20 unit, it just pretty much took us from having $2 to $3 million worth of real estate to over 10, essentially overnight, what it seems like at this point.
Definitely. Definitely. You talked about some of those loan programs that were able to help you, where you were able to buy properties without as much income. Mm-hmm. So you're talking about like 10%, 15% down, or
actually free, actually 0% down. These were homes where these were programs where if you were able to find the distressed asset and the distressed asset was 25% market value, that basically counted as your down payment. So if it was a $100,000 home, if you could cover all the repairs and the purchase price in less than $75,000, the bank would cover all the repair costs, and you basically didn't have to bring any money down. Wow. And so we really jumped in 10 toes down on this program and started to do the research, do the legwork to find these properties without basically having any money out of pocket.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And that's one of the things we teach now in our system, mm-hmm. is that you have to constantly be calling banks. It should be a regular routine task within your business, because you never know what you're going to find.
Definitely. How do you recommend people go about reaching out to banks? Like, some people say you should use small local banks. Some people have other opinions. You know, if someone wants to know what type of banks they should look at, what they should ask, like, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, we have a whole system that's laid out with the specific questions to ask bankers, so you get the most bang for your buck. We actually teach people how to schedule throughout their month, where they're regularly connecting with not only bankers, but also brokers and contractors, which are the three gatekeepers to the real estate game. And so if you're constantly building these networks out, you're going to have the opportunity to win in a major way. But to answer your question specifically, as it relates to banks, local banks are going to always have more flexibility because they're heavily invested in the locale or the geographic location. And so, but what was unbeknownst to us was that local banks actually have a huge spectrum on what they can offer. So while Bank A may be able to give you 25% down, or you only have to bring 25% down, Bank B may say you only have to bring 15% down, or Bank C may say we need these 10 items before you can work with us, and Bank D may say we only need one thing for you to get started, and we're ready to go tomorrow. So there's a lot of different things that will be more palatable to your specific situation. That's why you've got to make it a point of emphasis to always be making those calls.
Definitely, definitely. So you alluded to it earlier, like a turning point where you realize, you and your wife realize, all right, we've been getting the single family homes, it's been going well, but how do we grow larger? And you mentioned targeting 2 to 20 units. And so can you talk about, just from a strategy perspective, you know, what did that look like? Because, you know, if you're looking at maybe 8 to 10 units, is a little bit different than if you're looking at a single family home, just as far as like what you're calculating, what you're looking for. So can you speak a little about that?
Yes.
Just
for
like
sure.
the shift you had to make.
Well, first of all, as what often happens, life happens, right? Which causes us to have to make a shift. Part of the reason we made that shift was not only because of our ambition to want to grow, but also because that program that I mentioned earlier ended, essentially. So we no longer were able to take advantage of getting properties with no money down. So we were like, what is our next step? We knew we were having success, but we wanted it on a higher level. And that's when we made the decision, let's start looking into multifamily. Well, we didn't know how to do it. We didn't, first of all, have the capital to do it. And so, again, it was through this process of calling banks and virtually learning what the process was. And what we ended up embarking upon was we were able to refinance all of the properties, which I think we had about 25 units at the time. We refinanced, took a major chunk out, and then we went hunting for larger properties. And we were able to get our first 30-unit property in December of 2020, which was a million-dollar purchase through our refinance. And so we pretty much learned the game, and we've been washing and repeating ever since.
Wow. Talk to us about that. Was it 30-unit the first multifamily?
Yes.
Wow. So you went from, you said 25 single-family units, And then you made a big splash. I thought you were going to say, oh, yeah, we, you know, we bought a 6 unit, but you said we went for 30. So yeah. Talk to us about that, just, you know, how you found the deal and you know, financing and all that stuff.
Well, again, it's always going to be about bankers, brokers, and contractors. Mm-hmm. If you've got those people on your team, you're going to be able to accomplish anything you want in this real estate game. And so we then begin to build out our connections with brokers because they're the gatekeepers of these commercial properties. So as we began to get on the list of various brokers, deals started to come up. And actually, this was right around the time when the market was starting to really ramp up and the competition for these properties started to ramp up. So we had to be strategic in that arena as well. And so what we did was we put an offer on a property that was actually under contract. We went in as a second and hoping, not hoping, but knowing that if the deal fell through and the buyer and the seller didn't consummate the relationship, that we could have first rights to this property. And 3 months later, it basically fell into our laps for $100,000 less than what it was under contract for. And so we jumped on it. But yeah, it was all through that incessant commitment to calling bankers, calling brokers, and calling contractors.
Got you. Wow. So were you were y'all were self-managing the first 25, right?
Yes.
So what was it like, well, adding 30 doors and at that size, it comes with a property manager, right?
Right. No, great question. So this was when we learned the power of self-management, because we've got these 25 single family homes that we're self-managing. All of a sudden we make it to what we feel is the big leagues. And it's like, wow, we've got a property manager here. Like, we don't have to do anything. It's going to be totally hands off, right? Well, that was not the case, because the properties weren't being rented. The costs were constantly rising because our property manager chose to use the highest price contractors, which worked for her company. And essentially, the complex was losing money. And we had only ever made money because, again, we were getting these deals that had so much equity on the front end that the cash flow was just doing really well. And so what we realized was that the property management setup wasn't working for us. There was no flexibility there for things like how to fill vacancies. Our property manager had a certain structure. You had to meet a certain criteria. You had to have a certain credit score, all these different criteria you had to meet in order to rent a vacant unit. And we're like, hey, why don't we go for people that, like, take out the credit score? Let's go for people that have different metrics. And they weren't willing to do that. So we took over, and within a month we had 3 units that had been vacant for over 2 months rented. We began to use more handymen and contractors that we knew rather than high price contractors. Like I said, we had really started to build out our contractor connections. And the property virtually turned around overnight, the profitability of the property, that is. And so we learned a valuable lesson, and that was that self-management creates margins. That's a huge expense, not only the 5 to 10% you're paying your property manager, but all the other costs associating and operating the property that you don't have any ability to manipulate as an outsider looking in. And so we literally put our hands on the wheel and took over that. And as a result, we've been able to develop systems, because obviously we work, and we've developed systems that allow us to manage in less time.
Got you. I'm glad you mentioned the self-management piece, because it's a controversial thing within the real estate space. Like, a lot of people say, oh, you shouldn't manage a property because then that means you have a job.
Right.
You give yourself another job. Talk to me about that.
Well, so we call it self-management just because we're in control. Like, we have the ultimate say so. But first of all, it's not you managing. Okay. Your first employee is going to be your software. Like, there's so many property management systems out there that allow landlords to do so much remotely. The second thing is going to be your staffing. You are going to hire some people, whether it be on a part-time basis or a commission basis, that are going to allow you to be more hands-off with the day-to-day operations of the property, of managing the property. And then lastly, you're going to have systems. You're going to have systems that create scale, like I mentioned earlier, where how you do one thing is how you do everything. So you're not going to have to reinvent the wheel time and time again when it comes to management. You take one system and you apply it to properties again and again and again, and you continue to build out your staff, you continue to leverage the software, and it all allows us to manage over 150 property units in less than 10 hours a week.
Got it. So it sounds like you're using technology and hiring in-house.
Yes.
So that you have control over how things are done.
Yes. So what we do is we use the property management. We have several different systems we use. One is called Buildium, which is basically controls the tenant portal. That's what the tenants see. That's how they put in maintenance requests. That's how they pay rent. Allows us to manage the tenant information. Mm-hmm. Then we use staffing. So we've got a part-time office manager who's a virtual assistant from the Philippines that, you know, we pay $5 an hour, right, to answer phones for us throughout the day. Then we have a maintenance manager who runs all of our maintenance, but he is basically paid by the job. So it's not like that's a salary that we're paying. We pay him as the work comes in. But because we have scale and so many properties, he stays busy, so it's worth his while. So it's a full-time situation for him, which is another benefit. And then we also have a leasing manager who we pay on a commission basis. Every time she leases a unit, we give her 50 to 75% of that first month's rent.
Got you. I'm really glad you broke that down, because you just explained how you can self-manage. You can have the people working in-house for you and not have to necessarily work with an outside company.
Right.
And what I think a lot of people don't consider is the fact that you don't really have control. Like, you can manage the manager, whatever that means.
Yeah.
But it's like, if it's your staff, it's your staff, right?
Yeah.
Like, it goes how you want it to go, how you see fit. You know what I mean? And you have more control over who's, you know, who the contractors are, who these people are. And to your point, you built out your network of contractors, handyman, so on and so forth. So you already have the people who can execute the way y'all want it to be done.
Right. No, you got to think, whatever that property manager, whoever that property management company you're working with, they're going to have their own software. They're going to have their own staff. They're going to have their own systems that may not necessarily correlate with how you would like to run that property. And so because you're not the person creating them, it sometimes isn't a fit, you know? And so we learned that it was just best to do it ourselves, and it allows us more flexibility, but it also is something that's not hard to do. You know, we basically built this through the foundation of calling these different stakeholders on a weekly, monthly basis. And even after you found a great leasing manager or a great maintenance manager, odds are you're going to need another one at some point, whether that one leaves or whether you want one that has more capabilities, or you want two, right? You don't ever want to be beholden to just one person. You don't want to create bottlenecks in your business. So we continue to do that on a monthly basis. We're always calling. And so it's really a commitment to that exercise, which has allowed us to build out our property management pretty easily.
Love it. Love it. So you got into multifamily, you got the 30 unit. How did things develop from there? Because, I mean, you know, you got a lot more.
So at that point, we began to get into syndications. Mm-hmm. And so we began to connect with the word kind of got out around the city through, obviously, when you're calling people all the time. So a lot of the brokers that we worked with started to introduce us to other would-be investors. And we developed what we now call the Black Wealth Network in our city. And we've got a team of probably about 25 working professionals, doctors, lawyers, financial advisors, within the city who want to invest in real estate and really have a mindset to develop our community as well as make some money, you know? And so we started syndicating deals and buying deals through the capital of six or seven investors. And so we've basically been structuring those deals. Obviously, we come in and have the ability to manage the deals effectively. And so we purchased a 24 unit in April of 2021. We purchased a 20 unit in August of 2022. And then we just purchased a 14 unit and a 4 unit just at the end of December of 2022 through that system.
Love it. For those who may not know, can you explain what a syndication is?
So syndication is basically where you have a pool of investors and you're pooling money, almost like a REIT. So if you've got a down payment of $200,000 on a $1 million property, you get a piece of that $200 from various investors, and you put it together and you structure your payouts based on where you can structure your payouts on a variety of setups. But we basically structure our payouts based on the percentage of capital invested. So the ROI is based on how much you invested. We typically pay anywhere from 8 to 10% quarterly on a monthly basis. The payouts are quarterly, but it compounds monthly. And then because of the opportunity to refinance, we aim to pay back the initial investment within 2 to 3 years. And so it's a really beneficial setup that's allowed us to get to our next level.
Definitely. And what I like about that is you mentioned the Black Wealth Network and partnering. A lot of people in our community struggle trusting and partnering with other people.
Yeah.
So how were you able to get others on board to invest in real estate, many of whom probably haven't invested before? Can you share more about that?
No, man, it was absolutely a God thing, because you got to think, I'm an athlete who is used to being on my own. You know, when I was traveling, going from team to team, there was nobody there with me other than me and my wife. And so we got very comfortable in our solitude and in our silo, where we didn't necessarily look to reach out or develop partnerships. But we basically came to the end of our rope, meaning we were out of capital. We had this great expertise, but we couldn't move forward. And again, it happened organically because people began to seek us out for that expertise. And then they're like, well, we want to do deals with you. And we're like, what? Like, okay. You know? And so we started to look through it and say, this is not just an opportunity for us to help people, but it's an opportunity for us to move the ball forward faster for ourselves as well. And so those are always the best deals when it's collaborative in nature and each side is getting something out of it. And so it's happened organically, and it's been something that has been great for us.
Definitely. I think it's amazing. You mentioned there's a network of about 20 to 25 or so professionals within the city that are all collaborating together. And I mean, I want people to really know we can work together.
Absolutely.
Right? Like, we can work together. Yes. You know, we can trust each other.
Yep.
You know, you can find people who want the same things that you want and are striving for the same things that you want. So I appreciate you breaking that down and really explaining how you're able to collaborate, and then everybody wins.
Well, real estate is a team sport first and foremost. And so I don't care if you're Grant Cardone, if you're Donald Trump, Magic Johnson, like, your capital is only going to go so far in this real estate game. I mean, when you're putting down $1 million on a 20 unit property, that's a small deal in this grand scheme of things. That's going to cost you $200,000. There's not a lot of people that have that and definitely have the ability to do that time and time again to achieve that scale I mentioned earlier. So you're going to have to partner with people. I tell people all the time, your very first partner is your job. Your second partner is a bank. And then after that, you're going to go need to get some people. You know, you're going to need to get some investors. And investors come in all shapes and sizes. There could be money partners. We have partners that help us with management and don't necessarily put in sweat equity rather than the capital. And so you have other partners that come in and bring are sort of the brain trust element. They have the knowledge where they can kind of help your business grow from a wisdom and experience standpoint. And so you're going to eventually need to partner with people in some form or fashion. And so you, at first you have to be open to that. Mentally, you have to be there, accepted of that.
Definitely. What's your advice to someone who is afraid of raising money?
Well, I would ask why you would be afraid. If you were afraid, maybe number one, it's because you're not confident in your abilities. Number two, you may be afraid because every investment comes with its share of risk, and you may be afraid that you can't pay back the investors what is promised. And so both of those deals can be solved with expertise and wisdom, because if you know more, you're going to be able to have more confidence in the deal. You're going to be able to build in more margin, as we talked about earlier, that is going to allow you to be able to pay back your investors. And then your experience is also going to tell you that everything has risk involved, right? There, it could potentially go wrong, and there are fail safes for that as well. And so it's just about getting more knowledge to make you all the more dangerous.
Definitely, definitely. So we were in a car coming over, and you mentioned that about 100,000 people have moved to Tulsa in the last year. Is that right?
Yes.
So this is the first time we've had somebody on the show from Tulsa who invests in Tulsa, the home of Black Wall Street. Mm-hmm. And so can you talk more about the market, just the real estate market and just the growth of the city? I mean, if 100,000 people are coming, there must be something drawing them there. So can you share a bit more about the market itself?
Oh, for sure. The influx of, people from the coast moving into the Midwest, just because there's a cheaper standard of living, much lower cost of living, rather, with a high standard of living, meaning you can get a home with green space, great schools, things of that nature, slower lifestyle. It's brought a lot of people in, and it has pretty much taken our real estate, which had been inundated from the national increases that you see on all the coastal areas. Real estate had remained relatively cheap, and now we're starting to get those rises. So if you're somebody who's already in the game, it's been really good for our equity and value and cash flow through the rise of rents and things like that. But if you're somebody on the outside who's trying to get into that game, it's become more akin to what you're seeing on the coast. And so it's been quite the dichotomy. But I tell people all the time, education and action. If you invest in those two things, there's so much you can learn for free, and there's so many steps you can take for free, and you can figure it out. But so many people get inundated by that that mindset that I can't do it. It can't be done here in LA. It can't be done in Tulsa now that people are moving here. It's too competitive. Just continue to get education, continue to take action, and you'll make your way.
Definitely, definitely. So as you're looking for deals, what's your general criteria? Because I'm sure, you're not just picking up everything. Right. It has to make sense. So at a high level, what are you looking for in those 2 to 20 unit plus apartments?
Well, our buy box is typically tertiary market. So we're looking to create deals first and foremost that create between 10 to 15% cash on cash returns. Now, 5 years ago, when you could throw a dart and hit a deal, it was 20% all day. But now we've learned to deal with 10 to 15% cash on cash returns. We're typically looking at anywhere from a 6 to 8 cap rate. And our buy box is typically between 500,000 and 1.5 million. Like I said, we aim for 20 units or above, but in our company, we teach people to buy anywhere from 2 to 20 units. I tell people all the time, take down your 10. So in order to get them to take action, to not stop at the first or the second, but to come in thinking scale, 10 or more. But to answer your question, pretty much 500,000 to 1.5 million, 20 units above. And we're looking to create a cash on cash return of 10 to 15%, meaning if we put $100,000 down, we want to make back $10,000 annually for ourselves and our investors to split. And generally within 2 to 3 years, we want to return that through refinance. So these need to be deals that are typically 10 to 20% below market value. So if you purchase $1 million property, that's 20 units, it needs to probably appraise at 1.1 to 1.2 million that first day you buy it. And so that's our typical buy box.
Got you. In terms of, you mentioned the refinance is key just to, you know, the payout and stuff like that. What are your thoughts on the interest rates? Has that impacted any of the projections and stuff?
Absolutely. It hasn't impacted our projections, but it has impacted our timeline. But we go in pretty much saying 3 to 5 years on the refinance. So it gives us some time. A lot of times you can refinance in 12 months. We just bought a 14 unit that we all in, we're at about 500,000 and it appraises for almost 900,000. So we can literally go get our money back right now if we want, but then we're saddled with that high interest rate, which is going to give us a higher mortgage payment, which is going to eat into our cash flow. Now the numbers still work, but it's our ace in the hole. Why not wait? And let's say that rate comes down by a point and a half. Well, now that may be $1,000 more in cash flow a month, in addition to the equity that we're going to pull out. So it's just it's a waiting game.
Gotcha. That makes sense. So when you refinance, is it paying the investors back? In some cases, I'm sure each property is structured differently. Is one of them like you refinance, you pay off what you pay them back what they paid, what they invested, and then you retain the equity, or how does that work?
So you can structure it in a variety of ways. How we structure our deals is through what I call infinite returns. What we're trying to create is infinite returns. And so we're trying to pay back each of our investors what they put in the deal, and they continue to reap the rewards of their investment year after year. So they continue to not only benefit from what I call pets. It's the reason why everybody gets into real estate. It's profits, equity, and tax savings. You only get those benefits in anything that you own. You don't get those benefits as an employee, right? So you have to be an owner of some sort of asset. So what makes real estate unique is that you can take advantage of profits, which is monthly cash flow. You can take advantage of equity through refinance, and you're getting tax savings on top of that. So these aren't cashed as or they aren't taxed as ordinary income. So it's really beneficial. So we aim to, if we take $100,000 from you, we're aiming to pay you back $10,000 annually, which you may say, you know, that's pretty cool, but that's nothing to get too excited over. Well, then when I tell you I'm going to pay you back that $100,000 in the next 3 to 5 years, and you're going to continue to get that $10,000, that's an infinite return. That is worth getting excited over. And so as long as we own the property, we aim to pay that back almost like an annual dividend, what you see with a stock year after year.
Definitely. It makes sense. Couple quick terms. Could you just go back again to explain cash on cash return, cap rate? For people who may not know.
So cash on cash return deals with how much your capital invested versus the capital you're receiving. So if you're putting in $100,000 and you're getting back $10,000 annually, that's a 10% cash on cash return. Cap rate has to do with purchase price of the property versus the NOI, which is the net operating income, which is basically how much revenue, which is a calculation of how much revenue the property is bringing in versus how much it was paid for. And so cap rates are almost like comp rates in the single family space. Whereas you're going to take a cap rate only makes sense in context of what other cap rates are in that area, right? So if you see this property on street A is paying at an 8% cap rate, and this property on street B right next to it is paying at a 6% cap rate, you know that second deal is either more expensive or the income it's pushing out is less. That's a worse deal. As cap rates go down, it's a worse deal for the buyer. So the higher the cap rate, the better. Typically in large metropolitan areas, and even in Tulsa now, you're starting to see 4-3% cap rates. That means people are buying these properties and there's not a lot of margin for cash flow. Those are equity deals where they're just hoping the value of the property raises, and maybe in 3 to 5 years they can just take out the refinance money. But we like to have higher cap rates so we can take advantage of cash flow now and refinance later.
Definitely. Definitely. So one of the other reasons I'm excited about this episode, we just talked through a lot of what y'all have going on. Yep. And you still work.
Yeah.
And so one might think there's no way this guy and his wife are still working. There's no way and managing all these units. So can you share a bit more about that too? And,
for sure.
And just that balance as well? Because, I mean, you do have also a pretty demanding job.
Right.
So talk to us a little more about that. 'Cause I'm sure a lot of people can relate.
Well, yeah, man. Like I mentioned, we've been investing since 2016 and we've been growing and we've had these different iterations of our growth, and essentially to where we've begun to bring people in as investors. And it's caused our knowledge and expertise to become more well known. And so more people have not only reached out to invest with us, but also to become educated by us. And we've been taking people through our curriculum for about the last 2 years to the point where we've said, well, why not, you know, create more structure behind this? And that was really the foundation of Real Estate While You Work, because we began to see that so many people did not believe you could do it while working. They're like, wait until I, you know, save some money, or let me wait until I'm at a better place. And it's like, real estate works for you while you're working. So why not marry the two together? Where you're at right now is a great place to start. Like I said, whether it's taking free education in action, or you get to the point where you're actually able and ready to do a deal, the time is now. Like, it really, everybody says the best time to buy real estate was 10 years ago. And the second best time is right now, right? So every day, every month, every year you procrastinate, you're missing out on life-changing opportunity. And that's why we created the slogan, Leverage the Legacy, right? Because you're able to leverage these properties through the help of investors, through the help of banks, through the help of partnerships. And it's essentially going to impact your legacy, because you're going to have an asset that creates income and wealth for your family for generations to come.
Love it. Love it. Do you ever feel the tension between working your job and investing and, you know, building out your educational platform?
Absolutely. You know, I do, because we talked about it. But it's tough, man. And I think as an athlete, one thing that I realize is that you need to choose your heart, right? Like, being lazy is hard. You know, sleeping in all day is hard. You wake up from sleeping in all day, you're like, oh, I'm tired. You know, living on the streets is hard. So obviously going to work is hard. Building a business is hard. Raising a family is hard. But you choose your heart. And once you've accepted that reality, okay, it's hard if I do it, it's hard if I don't do it, why not go and try to create something great? And so that's the mindset with which we go about, you know, managing business, while also managing the work, while also managing family, and et cetera, et cetera. Because it's about trying to create an impact, first and foremost for our family, but also the others we've been called to serve.
Definitely. How do you and your wife split up like responsibilities within the business?
Well, that's an interesting dynamic. So the way things work in my household is I'm the jump starter. So I get the harebrained schemed, and my wife's pretty much like, okay, fool, we'll see. We'll see if this is the flavor of the month next month. And so I built out our real estate and began to create momentum. And then she's pretty much the enhancer. When she comes in, things go to another level. Things make sense. There's clarity all of a sudden. And I perform the acquisitions. I pretty much operate as the CEO of our company as far as the top level. And she gets in on the day-to-day operations and manages our team. She does a lot with the finances. And now, as far as the Real Estate While You Work side, I've kind of taken over the buy and hold perspective, meaning you come in, I'm going to work with you on how to start your portfolio from a long-term buy and hold, buying properties between 2 and 20 units. She has developed an expertise in the wholesaling side. So if you don't yet have the capital, this is a play for you to get the capital by starting to wholesale properties. At the same time, that's going to develop the network like we talked about earlier, because you're in the game, you're taking action. So naturally, you're going to know other people who are involved in real estate, whether those people eventually become your brokers, bankers, contractors, partners, or what have you. You're now partnering that education with action, which, like I said, is a powerful thing.
Definitely, definitely. How aware are your kids of what's going on in that in the real estate side?
Kids are perceptive. It's crazy because you don't know what they're picking up. But I actually had the time and the wherewithal to ask my kids the other night at dinner, like, man, what do you want to be when you grow up? And we've got three kids. We got a 15-year-old son, a 10-year-old daughter, and a 3-year-old daughter. And my 15 and my 10-year-old were like, we want to be real estate professionals. Like, we want to own and manage real estate. And we were like, wow. Like, we didn't realize it had that type of impact on them. But it's crazy because they're understanding the power of being your own boss, of having and managing assets, and being able to create cash flow for yourself outside of the work environment. And I think that concept in and of itself is very, very powerful.
You're doing good.
From your mouth to God's ears, man. Hopefully.
Very prayerfully. Cool. Definitely, definitely, man. So you spent about 6-7 years playing ball, right?
Yes.
What countries did you play in?
Man, we started off in Italy. We then went to Russia, actually Siberia. We were out in the coldest part of Russia, the coldest regions. And then we got the opportunity to spend 4 years in Italy, going back and forth between Italy and Greece, which was very, very cool. And then my last 2 years, I was in the NBA G League with the San Antonio Spurs affiliate team. So,
Got you. So from overseas, what was that experience like for you? I'm sure a cultural immersion and just the different things you're able to learn from the different countries, in addition to, like, of course, playing. What was that experience like for you and your wife to do together?
It's like a fine wine. It's one of those things that grows on you. And the more, even as you get further and further away from it, that experience means, the meaning of that experience is ever expanding and increasing. I even coming out here to LA, I just feel comfortable because I've been able to travel the world, experience a variety of cultures and cuisines and all that. And so you understand how to move, you understand how to assimilate, which was not the case when we went there, right? Coming from Tulsa, Oklahoma to, you know, Russia, Siberia, Russia, we're like, where in the world are we? And we pretty much were homebodies and stuck to ourselves. But as we grew and had more experience, we began to venture out. We began to make friends and opportunities. And actually, this summer was our first time going back to Europe in more than 15 years. And we just picked up where we left off because we that's ingrained in us now, right? Yeah. And so those experiences are indelible and they give you so much greater perspective. And so as you get older, you appreciate that perspective more and more because it applies to more situations and you're able to leverage the value out of that opportunity.
Definitely. Which was your favorite country to play in?
By far, it was Greece because Greece was the most like America. So there were malls, there was a Starbucks on every corner. You hop in a cab and the driver speaks English. Italy was very much a foreign culture and they wanted to keep it different from westernized civilization. They very much valued Eastern thought processes. And so it was a little bit harder to assimilate. But yeah, that Greece was beautiful, man.
Yeah. What was it like playing? Did you find the playing style to be different? Was it difficult to be like the American on the team? Like, what was that experience like?
Yeah, there were some difficulties for sure. And again, it was a process that grew. It grew me as a leader. It grew me as far as my mindset. But it was a different style of play, no different from, I mean, anytime you go from collegiate to pro in any walk of life, the speed's going to be different. The way the game is processed is different. But yeah, there were some definite cultural barriers, some communication barriers that we had to overcome. But we eventually, like I said, assimilated and figured it out, and we're better off for it.
Definitely. So you did mention you had an opportunity to play in the D League as well, and so close to the dream. And I know you had a knee injury.
Yeah.
What was that experience like for you? I can only imagine what that felt like to be so close and get hurt.
Well, man, it's levels to everything, right? Like, mm-hmm. So I was close as close can be. Mm-hmm. And the difference between me and the guys that end up making it is still a gulf there, right? And no different from that actor that is so close, or that would-be CEO that is so close, or that would-be, you know, entertainer. And so you get to learning that there's levels of commitment, there's levels of expertise. So definitely diving into your craft at a higher level is a real thing. And that's why we're so big into what we do now, because we continue to unlock levels of expertise as we scale from 10 to 20 to 100 to 150 to hopefully 1,000 units, as we scale from, you know, learning to teach 10 people how to do this to learning to teach 100 and 1,000, and hopefully maybe one day 100,000 through Real Estate While You Work. We started to learn the process of unlocking levels. But overall, the biggest takeaway for me was that identity crisis, that whenever you lose something that has been so close and ingrained in your life, that you have what I call PTSD. I have post-traumatic sports disorder. And I was just lost. I didn't know who I was without the game of basketball, so much so that I nearly flunked out of law school my very first year out of being a professional athlete. And so, again, I found that once you've learned how to be an expert at one thing, you can apply that to multiple things. It's just about finding that thing. And so, again, I'm sounding like a broken record, but education plus action is the way to find that thing and the way to develop that expertise. And so, again, life is cyclical, right? You learn something that was a lesson mm-hmm. way long ago, and it continues to play out in your life over and over again. And so that's been a beautiful thing to, now that we see this train coming, let's jump on it. Let's go for the ride instead of letting it hit us and run us over and causing pain and strife. So it's been all glory to God, man.
Definitely, definitely. And you did mention that identity crisis. And so I know, again, big basketball fan. So I know a lot of times when your career is done, one, a lot of guys have already spent all their money,
yeah.
or, you know, whether they were overseas or in the league. And two, they don't know what to do.
Right.
And a lot of times they just stay there and don't ever really get back on track with something or figure out the next phase of life.
Yeah.
What was it for you that helped you?
You can easily be stuck in the muck or mired in mediocrity just because you're looking in the past. You know, for us, and I'm not going to say that didn't happen to us, because I mean, the amount of money I had my last day playing professional basketball versus the amount of money I had maybe 2 years later was much less, you know. So you're used to living fast. You're used to living a certain lifestyle, and that money siphons, right? And so it was only through God's grace just to realize that, hey, we've got to do something different. How do we do this? Well, how did we get to where we are now? We sat down. We figured out a game plan. We learn the education piece, and then we acted the action piece. And that sounds so simple, right? But so many people won't marry those two things. And that's why, you know, Real Estate While You Work has been so pivotal for us, is because we get to hold people accountable to that. People come in and say, hey, we want to build this. We want to buy 10 properties. We want to, you know, be able to eventually retire through real estate. But 2 months later, their actions aren't lining up with that, you know? And so being able to pull them back into who they want to become, that person they said they want to be, has been something that has had so much value for us because it served as an accountability piece for us as well. And so, as we all know, we're better with coaches. You know, I was best in my life when I was being coached, whether it be at the high school, college, or pro level. And so often as adults, we forget that. We no longer want to be coached. We want to do it all ourselves. Well, the highest paid athletes, the highest paid musicians, the highest paid entertainer, the highest paid business people, the highest paid CEOs have coaches. Like, we're not above having one either, you know? So that's been a learning experience for us.
Love it. Love it. So Tulsa, Oklahoma, the home of Black Wall Street.
Yes.
We all know about the massacre.
Yes.
1921. We know what happened, what went down. One of our conversations prior to this, you mentioned that that area of town is still going through some challenges. So I guess, can you talk about the significance of what you're doing in the city? And I guess maybe the dichotomy of some of the things that are still challenges
for sure
in the city too.
No, so I mentioned leverage the legacy earlier, right? So we think about the impact that having an asset and being able to either pass it down or leverage the value of it for our progeny. Well, when that is taken away, when that is disrupted, the opposite happens. I don't know what's the antithesis to legacy, but it's a negative thing, right? And it has resounding impact in the much the same way. And so when you think of that reversal of legacy for virtually hundreds, if not thousands of Black families in that North Tulsa area that happened, that occurred in 1921, and a lot of people don't know, occurred thereafter. You know, there was continued reverberations. That wasn't just a one-time event. And so because of that, you don't have the legacy there, you know, where you may have had the Black Donald Trump, you know, the Black Trumps or the Black Hiltons or, you know, the Black, you name it, you no longer have that. And in its place, you have poverty, you have sickness, you have strife, you have loss of life, right? And so being able to see this play out in real time, not that I was there from 1921 to now, but just even in the 30 years that I've been in the area, it weighs on you, you know, and it places a burden on you. And so us in the group that I mentioned, the Black Wealth Network, that's been a big part of our heart, and our mission is to purchase properties in the North Tulsa area in order to help with that revitalization process. And so you can't live in that area and especially be a Black person or person of color, period, and not feel some sort of calling to do your part to help.
Love it. Love it. And before we wrap, what does the future look like? What are some of the goals that you have for the business?
Well, we continue to grow our real estate piece. We're diving more and more into the educational piece. We actually have our first book coming out, Real Estate While You Work, Turning Your Professional Power into Profits. That'll come out this summer. We're aiming for a June 1st release, and we're just constantly growing, man. We've got the YouTube channel now, as well as the Instagram. And so we're trying to provide more touch points of education, that hopefully help people get their piece of the leverage to legacy.
Love it. Love it. And, you know, I think this has been a very, very inspirational interview. I think it's amazing to see, you know, how you were able to get into the second half of life, right? The second phase of life along with your wife and going from the single family homes and scaling that up pretty well, and then having that turning point and, you know, scaling up.
Right.
And then taking it to the next level and partnering with other people and bringing others on board. So I think it's amazing what y'all been able to do. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, in the future, you know, we'll come back and we'll probably be at that 1,000.
Well, like I said, from your mouth to God's ears, man. And it's great having opportunities like this to kind of relive that and button it all up and put a bow on it. But Lord knows it hasn't been as easy as we're making it. There's been some trials and tribulations. But overall, like I said, you choose your hard. And when you're doing the right things, positivity is the harvest that you receive. And so it's been a great thing, man. And like I said, it has to be positive if we're at the point where we want to teach others. We want to contribute to others' success. And so I would just encourage everybody to, if you want to connect with us, go to realestatewhileyouwork.com. We've got a free small apartment success system that you can download. And it basically gives you the blueprint for the things I talked about in our talk today, which is just making those contacts again and again and again. It just walks you through how to either get your first deal in 90 days or get really close to your first deal in 90 days. And so this has been awesome, man. I appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And thank you to everyone for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast. If you haven't already, make sure you subscribe. If you're on audio, make sure you leave us a 5-star rating and review on YouTube. Make sure you like, make sure you subscribe. Thank you all so much. Look forward to talking to you soon.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue. And be sure to leave us 5 stars and a review on your favorite podcast listening platform. Until next time.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.